You are listening to the People Centric Podcast, where we talk through the toughest challenges that people face at work and give practical advice to fixing those challenges. Thanks for joining our movement to create workplaces that are happier, healthier, aligned, and empowered by putting people at the center of all that we do.
Hey, people-centric leaders, it's Don Harkey here from the People-Centric Podcast. We have today with us, we've got Stephanie Anderson is with us. We've got Philip Herzog is with us and Diana Realty from our team. And today we are going to talk about managers and hiring managers. And so a lot of companies that we work with, they're out there looking for their next generation of leaders to come in, or maybe they have an executive position that they need to fill, or maybe they have a supervisor level that they need to fill, and they're going out and interviewing people to fill those positions. But it's not like just hiring a lot of different jobs. A lot of times when you're hiring a different type of a job or a frontline employee job, you're looking at the capability of the employee. But what might you look for in the capability of a supervisor, manager, or executive as you're going out to hire? So we think this episode is going to be useful for everybody, because even whether you're an employee frontline or you're thinking about being a manager someday, you're going to hear some things that we're going to talk about. They're going to be like, boy, I need to develop that, or I need to work towards that. Those are the things I need to think about. Or if you're an executive listening to this and you have to interview somebody for a management position, or maybe you serve on a board and you're looking for an executive director for something, we're going to try to help you to find the right people and what you might look for. So we're going to jump right in. So first of all, Philip, I'm going to ask you a question first, just so that everybody's got to hear your voice to know what you're doing. How would you define a manager, Philip? You said we should open by defining a manager. So I'm going to throw that one right back to you, Philip. How would you define a manager?
Oh, thank you for listening. That, as someone who reports to you, I appreciate that. A manager, when we talk and coach, we usually say a manager, right? Is someone who has folks that report directly to them. You might have many people in leadership above you, but a manager is someone who in a way is responsible for you, whether it's coaching, leading. If you have an evaluation, they're the one that helps you take care of that. It's the person who's directly involved with your roles and responsibility and ensuring that you're aligned and empowered in your organization. So a manager could be someone, CEO all the way down. You're all managers if you have one or more folks that report to you when you're managing people.
All right. Good job. Oh, yeah, I put you on the spot there. We talked about really making sure we were prepared for these podcasts, so we always have a conversation ahead of time. And Philip, right before we jumped on, like seconds before we jumped on, he says, oh, by the way, before we start, we should define manager. So that was me just throwing that right back at him saying, Philip, define manager. Good luck. Good luck with that one. So Stephanie, here's your question for today, just so everybody can keep tuned into your voice and get you, if you're not watching this on YouTube, how do you define, I was going to throw a big word out at you, transesterification, go. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you see, it starts in Old England in the 16th century. And this is where I'm like, don't give me a bit. I love a bit. I was prepping my bit and I missed your actual question.
You're just going to, whatever question you answer, I'm going to make up the answer is what you said. Whatever question I ask, you're going to make up the answer for is what you just said.
Yeah, I'm really agile and adaptable. Great traits you should look for in a manager.
That was good to tie that back in. Diana's just looking in horror as we're watching this. And you should see, I know you all can only see who's speaking right now, but I can also see Diana, and her face is saying some stuff to us right now. But Stephanie, as you think about like layers of managers, we talk about like supervisor, manager, executive and things. What's the difference between those different roles?
I think there's definitely different levels of like responsibility and authority within an organization, right? Like I think how a lot of organizations would define a manager is very similar to what Philip said, where it's like they are looking at workflows and maybe some of the day-to-day processes. They're very much in like, what's right in front of me? What are the people right in front of me? What needs to get done today? And then as you start going up in an organization, you typically find a little more removal from maybe, hey, how do we accomplish this task today? To more of a strategic perspective, where now I'm not just thinking about the five people in my area. I'm thinking about maybe an entire department or an entire location, all the way up to C-suite levels, where you're thinking big picture for the org. So you are looking for a different a different skill set or a different perspective from, you know, a C-suite management role to like a frontline manager?
I think you just laid that out very, very well. Yeah. So it depends on what level you're hiring for. Are you hiring somebody that's a frontline person who's in the day-to-day battle, working mostly on process with a people and team, which is the supervisor role? Or are we looking for, like, on the other end of that spectrum, an executive who's going to be thinking about big picture and designing the team and moving forward? Those will be different questions. So, okay. Thank you, Stephanie. And we also have Diana Royalty on here with us. Diana, here's my question for you. On a scale from 9.5 to 10, how much do you enjoy working with this team?
It's definitely a 10, Don. It's definitely a 10.
Yeah. Thank you for being authentic and honest with your response.
I mean, if it's, you know what? It's fine. 9.5 or 10, give or take. It's, it depends on the day.
You sound like you're saying, what would you like me to say, sir?
Know how you want me to respond to that.
What do you want from me is what you're saying.
I mean, I feel like I say that all the time. What do you want from me?
Well, what do you want from me? Because as a CEO of the company and as a leader from that, as you're thinking about if you were searching for somebody, what do you want from a CEO as someone who's inside of a company?
Yeah, I mean, from my CEO, I'd prefer it if he was a little bit more clear about what he wanted from me. Just saying.
Diana, not right now. Diana.
I'm sorry. You're right. Not right now. No, but Stephanie kind of hit the nail on the head when she said, you know, at different levels, you're looking in different directions, right? I think the executive level, you know, if you're talking about the supervisor level, they're kind of looking down and around. They're it's that stuff that's really close to them. That next level up, the managers, they're kind of, some of their focus is up because they're dealing with the next level up, but they're still focused in and around, right? And then the highest level, those executives, they're focused up and out. Like they're not looking down. They're looking up on that org chart. They're looking out of that org chart and looking at trends and data industry knowledge and workforce, things like that. So I think it's where they're spending their attention and what direction they're looking.
Yeah. And Diana and I did an episode from on this podcast a few weeks ago on this, and we can throw that one out there for folks. I it's easy for me to say that. We can put a link on that somewhere, right? Or no? Is that a bad thing?
We can. It was months ago. It was a long time ago. But I can find it and I can link it in here. Yeah.
Okay. So we can put that. We'll throw that out there for you. Like, so if you're thinking about like what that role is. But today we want to focus on like what questions do you ask for somebody who's coming in to take one of those different roles. Let's start with a supervisor role. And this will open this one up to anybody. If we're looking for a supervisor and that person's coming from the outside, you know, maybe we're assuming you're hiring somebody from the outside at this point. If there's somebody from the inside, there's other opportunities maybe to bring them up into a role and hopefully you can find that. But if you do have to hire somebody from the outside and you're looking for a supervisor, what kinds of questions could you ask cleverly to get to know whether they would be a good supervisor or not? We don't know. We don't have an answer for that.
I have a generalized answer, right? I'm a big fan of behavior-based questions. I want to know how people act. I want to know how they react. I want to know what they think. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, okay, these are the traits that I want. I want them to be detail-oriented. I want them to be strategic, whatever trait it is. And then I'm going to ask very specific questions about how they have behaved to show me how they can interact with that trait. So let me see if I can give an example. Let's say that I want my executive to be able to handle stress, right? Then I'm going to ask a question like, what was the most stressed out you've ever been at work and how did you handle it? I want to hear about it and I want to know how they handled it. So I'm asking trait specific, behavior specific questions.
So to be clear, you're not saying, are you a detail oriented person? Are you able to handle stress? The person on the other side's like, no, I steal things from your company on a regular basis. And details just kind of slip through me. Actually, the bright lights of the work environment actually throw me off. So I leave work frequently. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't say that. People say, yeah, I'm very detail oriented. I'm very good at handling stress. But I like your question. You're using the behavioral based questions to say, I'm going to identify the behavior that I want from that person. And then I'm going to ask for situations where they share how they performed inside that behavior. I like that a lot. How can you determine what behaviors you want from a given supervisor? Do you think there's some standard ones? Do you think there's specific ones in different environments? What are all of your thoughts there?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's probably some standard ones, you kind of want your executive to be strategic thinking. You know, I think there's some standard ones for certain roles, but really think you can customize it based on what your company and your organization needs from that role. CEO, COO, right? If you were rewriting my job description, you might want different traits than what you have now, right? If someone else was taking the job, you might want something different. I don't know. You could. And so you'd want to sit down and think, like, what are we missing? What do we have? And what do we need? And I think those are the questions you have to ask about and to determine what traits you need next.
Yeah, but I like that. And we're talking about, like, right now we're zeroing in on supervisors specifically in terms of that role. And we'll talk about executives a little bit more, because I think there's a little bit more of a deliberate process with that when you're thinking about executives. You know, what role, I guess, when you look, like, I like what you said, like, what do you need in terms of on the team? Can we give some, like, examples of, like, okay, so this team needs this, and so we're going to look for this, and then what kind of questions, how could we turn that around? Let's play that out a little bit, just as an example for our listeners.
I mean, I would say sometimes you have to think about, like, the personality or vibe of that team too. Like, if you've got a bunch of people who are pretty direct communicators and they prefer a direct communication style, you probably need to look for someone who is comfortable communicating with the team that way and is going to work with them in a way that feels really great. Not to say that you allow the personality of the team to define, like, the whole department or area or what type of supervisor you'd bring in. But I think it's really good to kind of, like, know thyself in that moment of, like, what is the current culture and vibe of that team? And if you like it, then find someone who's going to emphasize the good things you see. And if you don't like it, then yeah, bring someone in who maybe is going to appropriately challenge some of those cultural issues or maybe some of the personality quirks you don't love. Like, you wouldn't ever want to feel like you're accidentally throwing somebody to the wolves if it's a team of really highly assertive, highly competitive people. And then you hire a manager who is not comfortable being assertive. They're a more passive personality, or, you know, they prefer to just kind of be at their desk all day. And it's a team that's out and about and moving a lot, and they probably need a lot more support from you. So I think it can be helpful in terms of think of, like, okay, what does the team look like right now? What's the personality or the vibe? Do I like that? And then kind of determining some of those traits that way.
Yeah. So what we're describing here is a moment before you go to fill this role where you're sitting down with somebody, other people on the team. Maybe it could be even be people who are on the team of the supervisor, right? Is it appropriate to go to the team who you're talking to that you're going to hire a supervisor for and talk to them a little bit about, like, what kind of a leader do you all think you need? Would that be helpful?
You absolutely should be doing that. Yes.
Yeah. And why, and why should we do that? What's the benefit in doing that?
Your team is going to get the buy-in and say, like, great, we are going to get the leader that we want, right? Where we have say in who manages us. We have say in who we're going to hire and is going to oversee us in our work. And I think that's really important.
So what I think what we're not saying is to give them necessarily even a vote, but just to say, like, you have a voice, right? There's a difference between a voice and a vote. Like, we're not going to go to the team and say, okay, there's three candidates that we interviewed. Let's vote on who we think is the best candidate. But if you met with the team ahead of time and just talked, if you have an opportunity to, and say, like, hey, what kind of a leader do you think that we need? What are some of the traits that we would lay out? Then you could have a discussion about that.
Yeah. And you just made such a good point and distinction, Don, because I think we have to clarify it and almost say it again of, like, you're not turning the hiring process into a total democracy where there has to be consensus from the entire team that that's the person to hire, but you are giving them a voice to say, like, what do you want the department to look like? How do you want our department to grow? What are some of your guys' aspirations and goals, even for the company or our department, yourself personally? How do you want to grow? What do you feel like we need in this next person to hit some of those that would be really supportive of you? So you're asking them to help you define the traits, not say they get to pick who the person is. Because I think, you know, if you could see our team, we're all kind of nodding, because I think we've seen leaders, like, mess this up before, frankly, where then all of a sudden the team gets really frustrated because they felt like the way it was presented to them was, well, then we were going to get to help decide. Like, we were going to essentially be presented with two candidates at the end. We were all going to get to meet them. We were all going to do that. So make sure the process is still really clear for your team and that you're very clearly saying, I want you to help me identify traits I should be looking for, or specific skill sets. Like, they might be able to say, well, we've got a gap on our team here in this skill area, and we all want to grow in that. Well, then maybe find somebody who has awesome experience in that and could actually do on the job training with everybody on your team to help them grow the way they want to grow.
That's good, because sometimes what your team wants may not be exactly what they need. So you're listening to a variety of traits, and then some of them you might listen to, and some of them you might go, nah, I'm going to go a different direction. I can remember a team that we worked with where we did interview some of the employees and said, okay, well, we're going to be filling this role. What do you want? And we had a couple people say, like, I just want a person supervisor that just stays out of my way. I don't want any changes. I want them to completely stay out of my work. And we were stepping back, looking at the performance of that overall department, going, you kind of need somebody to lean into the work a little bit here. We're not performing at the highest level. So a person coming in laissez-faire is probably not going to be a great fit for you. You know, we do talk about leadership styles. Sometimes it might be good to talk about that from a supervisor standpoint. Everybody has a default leadership style, and the default leadership styles, you can be laissez-faire, which means I'm going to kind of sit back and wait till the team does something. You can be democratic. There we go. Right. Where I'm going to work with the whole team. I'm going to say, hey, everybody, what do you all want to do? Or I can be, what's the word? Prescriptive, but there's a better word for that.
Authoritarian.
That's the word I was having trouble coming up with. Thank you for that. Authoritarian. You can be authoritarian where it's like my way or the highway. And there's different teams need different things, and you need those in different moments. So your ideal, the best supervisors use all three of those different sets, but you might do good to ask the questions of, tell me how you've dealt with those stressful situations. What is your default mode as a supervisor? Just to kind of understand that. One piece that we talked about, but we kind of glazed over it a little bit, is that, you know, supervisors on a day-to-day basis have the most where they have to keep their team accountable. They really have, there's accountability. So supervisors have to be able to have difficult conversations, hold people accountable. How can you find out if a supervisor is good at holding people accountable or not in an interview?
And I could kind of go back to what Diana said, is like, do some situational, like ask them to describe a time maybe where, because a lot of what they're going to be talking about too might be some of like the day-to-day stuff, like clocking in timesheets and people being on time or tasks getting done or not getting done, you know? So you might ask them, you know, depending on how that works on your team. Like, hey, have you ever dealt with an issue of someone being tardy to work? And how did you handle that? Or do you ever have a situation of like absenteeism? How did you handle that? And get them to tell you a story, right? Because Diana said this really well earlier. So I'm repeating her a little bit, but you want them to get talking. The more that they can get talking, you will learn more and you'll see, versus giving them answers that they can, or questions they can answer maybe in just one sentence, like get them to tell you stories about some of those things that are situational, or even something, if you don't have something that specific that they're going to manage, something as broad as like, tell me the last time you had to have a difficult conversation at work. Right. Cause then they could go anywhere with that. That could be with an employee. It could have been where they were having a difficult conversation up or out to a customer. Like, you could learn some really interesting things, even just framing a really broad question like that.
I think a common mistake in interviews, and I used to do this, and Diana has taught me otherwise, is we like to have good conversations, healthy conversations with people where we're in harmony and we're getting along, like normal conversations. We're not looking for tension, and in an interview you kind of are. So the idea of like asking those questions but then really listening to the answers and how they go about answering the question, like that question you just asked, like, tell me about a difficult conversation you've had recently or something, or a conflict you've had or how you dealt with that. You have to listen behind the scenes that somebody might say, oh my gosh, I got this real idiot that works for me, and Joe is all, and if they just complain about Joe and how awful Joe is, and they never talk about what they do with Joe or what their approach was, and they just tell you all these bad stories about Joe, that sounds like a red flag for me for a supervisor position. Because now you think about that, having that supervisor in that position later, and now they're actually in the position, what are they going to talk to you about as their boss? They're going to come to you and they're going to complain about Joe too. And you're going to be like, yeah, right, we need your help fixing Joe. Like, what do we need to do to make Joe better? And what's your role in that? So I think it's important to listen to how they tell those stories. Let's evolve this conversation. And we talked about the frontline supervisors. As we get up into the management positions and even executive positions, what kinds of things might we be looking for? Like how does that process change, and how is it the same maybe as we're looking for a supervisor versus looking for like a higher level manager or an executive?
Well, I think no matter what level of leadership you're in, you're building on, as you move up those that ladder, you're building on the skills you already had before. So it's not like, oh, I was a supervisor and I had to hold people accountable. I don't have to do that now, so I don't need to worry about it. No, you're still going to do those things. You still have to know those things. You're just moving to a different level of mastery, I think. And I think the one that is the hardest to move through those phases, I think, is communication. Because as you move up to the middle management, let's say from supervisor to middle management, now your communication isn't just down, it's also up, right? The communication has to flow a little differently. You have to take what the executives tell you and tell other people, right? It's not just task management, it's really situation management and goal management. And there's a lot more things that you have to communicate through, down and through and up and through, right? And so I think communication is probably the next hardest skill to build on, but you got to build on the skills that you had before. You're keeping all of the supervisor skills and adding new ones to your manager bucket.
Well, and going back to your behavioral based questions, then you're asking questions of that person. Then tell me how you communicate to a team. And you're listening for, you know, okay, well, I you know, via email, via conversations, I just talk with them. I'm pretty open with the team versus like an executive thinking, no, I have a strategic communication plan. I'm going to set up regular cadences with my team and with other teams across different areas. We're going to set common goals together. Like those are very different answers. You know, one sounds very supervisory of like, yes, I talk to my people on a day-to-day basis and I try to tell them what I'm thinking versus no, I'm thinking of the organization as a whole. A lot of times when we break down management skills for supervisors, you know, they need to be able to lead. They need to be able to evaluate performance. They have to give feedback. They need to be able to coach, hold people accountable. And they need to build team trust. When you move up, and I love what you said, Diana, that executives need to do that too. That's a common problem. Side note, we see executives who forget that part. And that might be a red flag for an executive sitting down and saying, like, I don't really supervise anybody. I'm a CEO. Like my job is to only drive the strategic direction of the company. And it's like, no, you're still going to have direct reports that are going to work around you. Like you still have to have conversations with them. You still have to do all those things we talked about before, but executives also have to start to think about their organization, how they design their organization around them, how they think strategically about where the direction's going. Like you said, thinking outward and inward at the same time, Diana, and then also fostering a really strong culture. So you can ask questions about that. Let's talk about one of the things we talk about a lot in the hiring phase, especially for executive positions, is the unicorn. I know we've talked about this in other episodes of the podcast, but describe when we say beware of the unicorn, what are we talking about?
I mean, everybody wants to work with the unicorn. You said executive level, but I think every person in every company is like, I'm looking for this person that can do everything. They got to be smart. They got to be funny. They got to be really talented in math. They also have to be able to write. I need them to do everything and anything. Don is checking off his list of like, yeah, I can do all of those things. So can I, so we're fine. But I feel like everyone's looking for that person that is all encompassing, right? I just want them to be able to do anything that I throw at them. And it's just not super realistic. It's just not. And so that's where sitting down and evaluating, what do you need for this role? What holes do you have? What is the reality of this? And what are the things that you actually really need them to do? And how do we shape the traits and the role around that instead of this like pie in the sky, I'm able to do everything person.
Yeah. When we've worked with companies and done executive searches for top positions, a lot of times we'll do an exercise where we'll sit down and say, what are the top three things that you need? And you can pick three from that person, top three characteristics. And as you brainstorm things, what you do is you get the unicorn. Like, I need a great communicator who's absolutely visionary. He's also really good in the details and also very great in terms of they're compassionate with people and they're emotional and they're also data driven. And like, you're describing no one, like no one really checks all those boxes. Those are very different dimensions of our human personalities. Nobody fits all of those boxes, but what are the top three? So it's like, what are the things that we really, really need? Like we did one for a city a few months ago, and they talked about like they should be really, really good communicator internally, externally. and they should be really good at accountability. And so whenever we looked in the interview process, we really focused on those specific areas, and it helped us to both eliminate a lot of people who hit those, maybe check those a little bit, but didn't really just shine in those areas. But then when we found the right person, it really stood out. It was like, no, they're excellent in all three of those areas, and they have shared multiple stories in all of those different areas. And I think that's really, really helpful. So let's talk about like even the length of the interview. So like if we do an interview with people, like what are we talking about? Are we sitting down for an hour with a person? Are we trying to create more time? Like what's that look like if we're looking for a management position? How much time are we spending to try to find that person?
I mean, hours, intense interrogation. They should clear their schedule for the entire day. And
I had an intensive interview. I feel like it was days. I had to fill out forms. It was a lot, guys.
Yeah.
But we put you through the ringer too. I know we put both of you through the ringer.
Yeah, it was like a dark alleyway at midnight. Days. I just like had to map with an X on it. I had to find a pot of gold somewhere.
Yep.
You know, survival skills. You have to survive in the business world. It's hard.
Don't forget the physical challenges we put in there. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Rope course, a few alligator pits. Only lost, you know, half a pinky. In terms of timing, it kind of depends on the level, I would say, you know, spaces and places. But especially, I know we've coached people before when they're looking at the executive level. You want to create a few different spaces where you can see them. You know, like, of course, if it's with your HR and leadership team at the boardroom table talking about traits and like, what would you do if, or tell me about a time when, that's really important. But whoever you hire, and I think this would apply to any leader, just the organic space in between. If there's a weight room, how do they behave with staff, you know, before they come in for the interview versus after? I think small examples of like, if there's some trash on the floor next to them as they walk in and out, it's not like you strategically put it there, but if it happens to be there and they walk by and pick it up, you're like, oh, that's really cool, right? Or if there's just a team member at the front desk that they know they're not there to talk to for an interview, but they treat them well or unwell. These are all really good signs to indicate like, is this person a cultural fit? Do they work well in these situations? Dinner out or something as well, right? So you can see them in a more natural space if that's appropriate, depending on where the timing is at with everything. So I would say if you can experience them in a few different settings, that's a really good space to see how a leader will be in everyday real life as well.
That's great advice, Philip. And by the way, we never got that pot of gold back from you when you went to look for that. So if you could return that, that would be helpful.
Did you actually find it? I felt like it was an impossible task. If you found it, you're going to owe us half the gold at least.
Half the gold. Let's cut the deal. I'll give you a third of the gold. I already put the rest in a Roth IRA. So I can't take that out now without penalties. So
a pot of gold. I was thinking of a broth IRA if it's because it's in a pot, but that's not very funny. That's a stretch for a pun. No, I like the idea of getting people who you're interviewing kind of outside of their normal interview mode. Like if they walk into a conference room and they're sitting across from you with the folders and you're in that mode, like everybody's at a high level of attention and all of that. And you're right. If you can spend enough time, especially with somebody who's going to take on a higher level role where you catch them in more candid moments, I like what you're like out in the lobby, weight room. Like if you go out to lunch with people, I like to meet people on interviews at lunch and in public places. I can remember an interview we did for an engagement specialist job. I think at Philip, but it was when we were looking for you, that I sat down with somebody and the person sat down across from me at a restaurant we were meeting for lunch, and the waitress came over to serve us and they were rude to the waitress. And before we even got into, before I asked any questions about anything, I already knew we weren't going to do it. I was like, we have to engage people. We have to have understanding of where people are. Like we have those characteristics really well defined in terms of what we're looking for. And it's like that person misses it. I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I've heard like these stories, anecdotal stories of like, you pay the waiter to spill water on the person and see how they respond and stuff like that. You have to remember that you're going to work with that person at some point, and like faking them out and putting them through too much, like we did Diana, is going to keep coming up over and over again. Like we did make Diana run through some
poops. Live it down.
I'll never live it down. We made Diana fill out a spreadsheet.
You made me sort and file a spreadsheet. It was very odd. It was odd.
We decided like we had some issues with that in the past. So we decided not to ask, you know, hey, here's a spreadsheet. I put some numbers on it. Can you sort the numbers and save the file? And she did. So she was hired.
I passed. Thank goodness.
She did. Diana does more than that now. Yeah.
A little bit, not much.
She can open it now and enter her own numbers in and sort it and then save it. She's pretty good. She's pretty smart. Good. Well, I think you've heard some themes on this in terms of manager or supervisor position or an executive position. It's not that different from other roles. If you think, you just have to think about what's the role of an executive in your organization. A lot of times what we see is it's not that the interview process is broken. It's the role definition piece that is broken. We don't know what role does an executive play, and we get lost in that. And I've seen people really get lost, like in the knowledge that other people have, like how much knowledge are you bringing in? Or they fall in love with the experience that they have, like, oh, we're getting such and such from this big company over here, and that company sounds amazing, and we'd love to bring them in, without really focusing on what does our team really need internally for us, and what's that role, and then what questions can we ask to test that out? So yeah, I think it's similar to other roles. You have to know what the role is. You have to have a discussion ahead of time, and then you have to create behavioral-based questions to go after that role. So good conversation.
Yeah, and I would add to that really quick, as we're talking about just interview length still being on my mind, is like, take that into consideration for the role as well, right? Like if you're hiring for an executive, spend more time with that person, because the risk of getting it wrong and the cost of getting it wrong is high, right? Because those are hard positions to fill. That person's going to have a lot of influence and impact on your team. They're going to touch a lot of things. So the cost of getting it wrong is high. So spend more time with them. And then if it's a lower level, like supervisor position, like frontline staff, I mean, we have heard some wild stories of like, I was applying for this retail manager job and they asked me to take a whole day off to come and spend with the team. Like that might not be realistic for that position. So just be cognizant of that and know, like, kind of create almost a chart in your mind in that way. If I think about it, like the higher the role, the more time, the more interaction, the more touches you probably want to see.
I think that's a really good idea. And then wait till you get the right person, right? Sometimes we think, and this is, I don't know where this started. I think it's started from, frankly, like executive search firms who say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to bring you a set of candidates and you have to select from one of those candidates. If you think about it, executive search firms, and there's a lot of great ones that are out there, and we enjoy working with those firms, but they're kind of like real estate agents. It's like, I want to show you five houses and I would like for you to pick one of those houses because I get paid when I move a house. Like that's what I get paid for. So their process is designed to try to get you to quickly pick somebody. And I have seen boards and pretty smart people say, well, I don't really like either of these two candidates, but we got to pick one because of the last two candidates. We're not going to get it. No, don't do that. Go all the way around again if you need to. Like, just run the process continuously. And the person that comes out the back end, the first person that comes out the back end that meets all those criteria is the right candidate to have. Yeah. Philip, what did you want to add?
Well, you know, when Stephanie was sharing too, I thought, you know, one trait through whether you're a manager, supervisor, executive level, is someone who asks good questions back. So I think one trait to always look for, like hopefully you don't have to ask, you know, do you have any good questions for me? Typically some people will ask some form of question, but helping gauge like how quickly they learn your culture and organization and your own problems or needs, I think would come up in the questions they ask you. So giving them time to ask questions, but especially if you have several connection points, paying attention, you know, to the tail end of all that, because if they're with you long enough as a leader, they should be able to strategically start to put together things that are great about what you do, but then also to realize there might be some areas for improvement here and here. So what about this? What about this? And also someone who asks specifically, right, about how you measure success. Because I think time and time again, we see job descriptions where it's on like under values or traits. What are we looking for? Someone who values team, someone who values output. And it's not defined, probably partly because it changes. So I get that when you write the job description, you don't want to make it so specific as to say, in April of 2025, we need 3% growth. But you want someone who helps take the conversation there. If you're not taking it there and they help it get there, that's a really good sign.
I like that. We just helped a client of ours hire a manager for department, and they wanted to double their output. I'll keep it generic like that. They wanted to double it. And initially they put out somebody who's like really driven and leadership driven. And we said, no. Tell everybody you want to double their output. Like you're going to come into this department and in a year, you're going to double the output than what we've been doing historically. And it scared away a lot of candidates. And the candidate that it did attract in is like, bring it, like, let's do it. And he has been there for a while now and working with him. And that guy is going to do it. Like he is I'm going to accomplish this no matter what. Let's figure this out. And you can tell. So they got the right person by saying that. Did they scare off some candidates? Like sometimes they'll say, like, I'm afraid of scaring off some candidates. And it's like, you should not be afraid of scaring off some candidates. We should design the process to scare off the wrong candidates. That's literally what this whole thing is about. So Diana, other tips for or anything? You looked at me like you were really surprised that I just said that. Diana, we're doing a podcast. What tips do you have?
I don't know. There's so many good things. I think that the other thing that you should definitely make sure you do is make sure that that person's values align with your values, right? We kind of talked around that, the skill set, the culture, all of that, but it really comes down to, are their values aligned with your values, which is part of the, can you see them in a candidate environment and judge some of those things? Can you ask behavior-based questions around your values? Probably. I would make sure that the values are looked at too, and that you guys are aligned in that, because that will cause a huge problem going forward if you're not.
I think that's great. Yeah, we didn't really talk about that directly, did we? So I'm glad you brought that up. If we hadn't, I think we'd have been kicking ourselves later saying, what about values? It probably should start there. And we should really think about that. One last piece that I would throw out there, if you're hiring managers or you're hiring for as any company, is think about your process for how you're getting candidates and challenge yourself on that. If you're always getting them from the same circles, then you're probably lacking diversity on your team. And that could be any kind of diversity on your team, but you should be thinking about, how can I go out and get a broader stream of candidates? Where else can I go so that I can get in? So widen your net a little bit more, and you'll see some really cool things if you do that. So just as a tip, you might think about that. So that's great. So listen, if you are listening and you're an employee and you're listening to this conversation, you're going, you know, this has been interesting, but where does this apply to me? It applies to you because, first of all, we may be looking for a candidate for your team to lead your team someday. And this might help you to understand what we might be looking for, or what you might be looking for. And maybe you want to aspire to one of those roles. Maybe you're a supervisor who wants to become a manager or a director or an executive someday. We've talked a little bit and dropped some hints about what skill sets you'll want to develop and what stories you'll want to be able to tell along the way to be able to search for those roles. Also, hopefully you listen to this as a candidate and you heard it from the other side of saying, if I go into an interview process, I want the interview to look like that. And if it doesn't, then maybe that's a red flag for me on the company that I'm about to go work for. If they come into me and they just say, so we are looking for somebody that works really hard. Do you work hard? You know, that's not a very sophisticated question. The company that you may be going to, you may want to ask some questions from the company back. You may want to reverse interview that company to see if they really know what it is that they want in order to be successful. Otherwise, you may not be in that role. So thanks a lot for joining us on this. I think this was a great topic. It was fun to be able to jump into this. As always, send us any suggestions that you have, or just shoot us a note. Tell us how much you love us. We need that from time to time. And we appreciate you joining us here on the People Centric Podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to the People Centric Podcast. We are so grateful for you joining us every week. If you like this content, please like and subscribe. Also, feel free to share on your social media with everyone that you know. It really does help us. If you would like to contact us, I have put our information in the show notes. Please reach out anytime. We love hearing from you. We will be back next week with a new topic. Until then, be well and lead well.